you know, come make that decision that this is how are you going to, you know, earn your living to support yourself.
Well,
your craft.
Well, for us, we had bought this piece of rural land in Calhoun County, West Virginia, which is a
pretty rural.
Pretty rural. there are no stoplights in Calhoun County. There's no coal mining. There's really no farming, and there's no industry. So, well, there is a little bit of industry, but there's not much. So, employment is a real problem. So, for us, we started doing this, and at that time we lived 2.5 miles up a road that was impassable at least 6 months out of the year. And we needed something we could haul out. The basket seemed to be a possibility.
We also needed something where you didn't have to put in a lot of investment. You know? So if you got your pocket knife, you know, you could just go with that.
But to answer your question, for a long time it was just a way to make a few extra dollars.
Uh-huh.
And we take, you know, any kind of work we could get, and then the baskets were something else we did until we got to the point where we could see that we could make some kind of
living. Yeah, I always believed that we could do it, you know, with baskets. We could do this, we can do this. Nobody's doing this, we can make money on this. But Tom was like, you know, I had to like drag him in, you know, Tom, I need wood, help me. You know,
let's take one more question and then
I'd like to address a question to all three four people there, which is, do you see the work that you're doing as a craft, or do you see it as an occupation, or is there a difference?
Craft. Is that the question?
A craft, or art form, or an occupation.
Or do you see a distinction between the two?
Not really.
I think what she's asking is it, you know, are you like the journeyman who goes in and slugs it out, or do you see it, you know, your craft as being just an integral part of your lifestyle, and that it makes you feel better about yourself because you do this particular craft. It's not just something you go in and, you know, work in 8 hours at the factory, you know, make produce some baskets, you know, for Basketville or whatever.
I do think one point on that. I think most of them here will agree with me. You almost have to love what you're doing. It's something that if you say, oh, I can't stand a basket, I hate them.
I say it all the time.
You live too far up in the holler. Get it out of there.
I do.
But you know, it's something you have to.
Passionately involved, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, if you would come into classes sometimes and stand up front where I'm at, and watch the expression on about 22 students' faces and just transform your opinion of how they feel about what they're doing, it would be impossible for me, because I think every one of them has a different, you know, some of them, you are killing it. It's, but you know, I love it. I don't think if it was something that I just had to, somebody would say, hey, you got to make baskets. But I just love it. To me, to create that basket, it's just a sense of relief to me.
It's really nice when you get a piece done that you really like. It makes you feel really good. But it also makes you feel really good when you make your car payment on time. So that's kind of my answer to it.
What is really good? And to follow right in Tom's story, is when you make a piece, a special piece, and you enter it into some show that has, say, $500 in wood, best in wood or something like that, and you have maybe 300 exhibitors in that show, and when the judges are done and it's announced and you are the one that won that $1,000 on that basket, that's the satisfaction, right? It makes you feel so good. But and to do something, and as he said, he kicked this, they threw it around, and then finally the lady said, oh, what a beautiful piece. You know, they're walking to a craft fair, they walk into the workshop or into these workshops that we have here, and they'll say, aren't those beautiful? You know, that does something to me. Mm.
Yeah,
it's really hard to explain what it does. But when you're in it and it's your profession, you do it, it makes you feel good. And then when you do get that money in your pocket, it makes you much better. The car payment comes in.
Well, I think we owe a debt of thanks to all these folks for sharing their knowledge and their experience.
Maybe we could take about a 5 or 10 minute break. For anybody who would like to take a closer look at any of these baskets, feel free and come up and take a look at them. As Doug says, they're strong. You don't have to worry about breaking them. We don't invite you to throw them across the room. And Doug will be starting with the storytelling concert right after that.
Traveling, and these are stories from my own experience. And we have Pete Gordon here to helping out, and without him, I just don't know if this whole thing would come together. So, stuck on the L.A. freeway, got rainwater in my boots, thumbs done froze, can't feel my toes, I was feeling kind of destitute. Jones won't lend me a hand. Then up come two cats in a Cadillac, and they say, won't you hop in, man? Flying high all the way. Well, the one who was driving had a bowler hat, the other had a fez on his head. But he turned around and grinned, I grinned back, but not a word was said. Well, I took out my harp and I played them a tune, I could see they were digging in. The one with the fez, well, he turns and he says, we'd like to help you make your trip. Flying high all the way. We just can't leave them out out in the rain, he just might freeze and die. Why don't we put him on a plane and send him on home in the sky? I went flying high all the way. Well, it took me to the L.A. airport, laid $20 in my hand. I paid my fare, I'm in the air, flying back home again. Flying high all the way.
Well, I was going to talk about hitchhiking tonight. And hitchhiking, you know, in this incredibly protected 20th century world that we live in, where, you know, where our insurance is paid and where our houses are insulated and where we have all we need, you know, we got our satellite dish out in the front yard, you can just get everything on TV, you know. It's sort of interesting, as a 20th century person, one of the few ways that one can really expose oneself to the mysteries and the vulnerabilities and put oneself at the mercy of the cosmos is by hitchhiking. I don't know if I'm sure most of you had that experience, you know? You stand out there on the road and a hitchhiking journey has the dimensions of just floating freely, riding the crest of a wave, and it also can have the dimensions of a pilgrimage or a quest or, you know, an incredible purposeful journey, and yet it still has to have that kind of lightness, that flexibility. A friend of mine was talking about hitchhiking, said you just, you know, whatever energy you put out is the energy that you'll bring in. And it's such an incredible, delicate balance when you're out there on the road watching the 20th century just file by, you know. volumes, just literally volumes are communicated when you're standing on the road, and you, it's incredible. In that 2 or 3 seconds when a car whizzes by you, you usually can tell why that person didn't pick you up. You can tell if they would kind of like to, but they're scared. And you can tell if they were. You can tell if they're only going a little bit. Sometimes they'll go like this, or they'll go like this. Sometimes they put up other fingers, you know. Sometimes you can tell when they're lying to you, when they're just saying they're just doing it, even though they're going to go far, you know. Sometimes you can tell when they think you're the scum of the earth. Sometimes you can just pretty much tell. You can tell when they'd like to pick you up, but they're scared. I guess I said that. I had a rather conservative uncle of mine, and one time when I was sort of in the midst of my hitchhiking years, and I was saying, "Uncle, tell me, when you pass hitchhikers, how do you relate? You know, do you ever pick them up? No. When you go by, how do you treat them? Do you look at them or anything? They're just part of the scenery." And I think, scenery. Now, you know, a lot of people come to West Virginia for the scenery. Scenery, what a 20th century concept. Can you imagine, you know, scenery? Scenery, if anybody can help me figure out what scenery means. We just, you know, that's sort of one of the themes here. It's sort of interesting to think about something that's sort of far away and yet something you look at but you don't get involved with. I don't know, it has something to do with that. And one time, after I was living up in New Hampshire, and after I'd gotten out of school, I decided that it's time for me to check out the Wonderland. I was going to go out and look for America. You know, the 60s were just getting over, and I was going to look for America. I wanted to check out the Wonderland. You know, Wonderland was California. You know, I wanted to go to California. And I figured the most interesting way to go would be to stick out my thumb and see if I could go out to California. I packed my little backpack, you know, and I started out. It seems like it was 1973, April Fool's Day. And I started out, I was going to visit some friends going down the East Coast, then move my way on out. And I stopped in, visit some friends in New York City. And it was interesting because when I was going along there, I looked down on the pavement. And when I looked down, I saw a little button. It's kind of a funny looking thing, and I looked at it, and it was a little copper button. It was really well made. It had a little screw-on clamp on the back of it, and it looked to me like it had two. When I first saw it, I thought it had two tennis rackets, and I thought, some little. It says Dartmouth Outing Club. I thought, Dartmouth, Ivy League. I must be some bourgeois club here. Yeah. Then I looked again, and I realized oh no, it said 1923 on it. And I realized, oh, this was 1973. This pin was 50 years old. And I looked, and those weren't tennis rackets at all. Those were snowshoes. And it had a pair of cross skis on it. Well, geez, I'd been living up in New Hampshire, you know, and I had done. I'd cross skis more than I particularly cared to mention, and I'd been snowshoeing a lot. And I thought, well, no, I can relate to that, you know. So I popped it on the lapel of my 60s chic army fatigue jacket, you know, and down the road I went, you know. So I stayed with some friends in New York and New Jersey for a little bit, and then I was found myself hitchhiking south, and I got in a late start out of town, and I found myself, it was just getting to be twilight, and it was right along the I was on the north side of the Delaware Memorial Bridge. You know, there's eight lanes going both ways, and it was just getting dusky. And I think, oh Lord, what am I doing here? You know, and cars with headlights just roaring back. I thought, oh brother, I don't know, you know, what in the world, and how am I ever going to get across here? You know, the toll road, and people are trying to figure out how to get in their toll booths, and it just seemed like, oh, there's a worse place in the world to be hitchhiking. And I hadn't been there long, and all of a sudden, this little Volkswagen with New Jersey plates pulls up beside me, and I hop in the car, and I hopped in, and these two fellas were sitting in the front, and I loaded my pack in. I said, where are you going? And they said, well, we're just driving around. And I said, now, oh, you fellas don't sound like you're from New Jersey. And we ain't. Well, we live in New Jersey. We's working up there. Well, where are you from? And the driver of the car, he says, my name's Jake. He says, I'm from West by God, Virginia. I said, oh yeah, well, I've been to West Virginia a little bit. I love West Virginia. Whereabouts are you from? He says, I'm from Grundy. And I said, Grundy? Well, I know about Grundy. I've been down in through there. That's over near Princeton, Welch. And he says, yeah, buddy. He says, that's God's country down there, buddy. It's just the finest country in there. Boy, I'd give anything to be back there now. And well, what are you doing up north? We work in factories. And I said, the other fellow, you from West Virginia too? He says, no. He says, I'm from South Carolina. I said, oh yeah, whereabouts in South Carolina? He says, down about Florence. And it turned out I had been through Florence a couple of years before, and I camped out along this little river. I'd been down near there. And I said, Florence, isn't that near the Lynch's River? He goes, Lynch's River? I ain't heard nobody talk about Lynch's River in years. How do you know about Lynch's River? And I said, well, I camped out down there. That's the prettiest little river. He says, brother, that's the prettiest river there is anyway. And he said, boy, I says, it says about this time, it's the spring of the year. He says, fishing? Oh, Lord, you like to fish? I said, oh, yeah, I like to fish. He says, boy, have you ever had fried shad roe? He says, the shad ought to be running up there about now. Oh man, my Aunt Minnie, she makes the best shad roe you ever seen. We have that for breakfast sometime. It's so good you about swallow your tongue. Oh, I'd give anything to be down there eating that shad roe now. Oh boy, I just miss being down there. And then Jake says, well, buddy, about this time it's ramp season here and there in the mountains where I'm from, buddy. Oh, man, I'd give anything to be eating me a big old bait of ramps here, a bunch of ramps egg, a big old cathead biscuit, buddy. My grandma, oh, sure, she'd make them ramps up. She'd fry them up a whole big old pan full of them. Oh, buddy, I'd just love to be back down there now. And then Jake says, boy, and then all them shad, I could just see, oh boy. And that spring just coming in there so soft and mellow like it does on this Lynch's River. Oh boy. And one of them looked over the other and says, what do you say, buddy? Why don't we just go down there for you? Well, I tell you what we'll do. We go stay with your people down there on the coast, down there in Lynch's River, and then we go and see my people in the mountains, buddy. We spend a couple days in the mountains with my people and a couple days, and we'll take him with us, buddy. You want to go with us? You go with us now. Come on, go with us. And I kind of looked over the front seat, and I could see they were just getting into their second six-pack. Oh boy, we're in for a good one here. Now, I was trying to visit my parents, and they lived in Maryland, and we, you know, if I just get across that Delaware Bridge, and they'd get down right just south of Baltimore, and I thought, if I just get down there, I said, well, I don't know, and they said, well, we're just driving down here anyway, we're just going down for a ways, and I said, your people ain't going to take to you bringing some stranger there with a beard and everything else, and he said, but any friend of ours is a friend of ours now. Now, come on, go with us, and I think, now, what am I hitchhiking for? Am I hitchhiking to broaden my experience? And here I'd have a chance to be with, you know, traditional peoples in both the coast and in the mountains. And boy, wouldn't this could be the experience of a lifetime. And being naive as I was, I said, well, yeah, I think I'll go with you. You know, you sure they wouldn't mind? Oh, good. You go with us now, buddy. We're going to spend a couple days with his folks, then we're going to go spend some days with my folks. Oh, Lord, we have us a good time. We show you the countryside, boy, like you never seen it. And I tell you what, we get him to drive, and we get in some serious drinking. Well, I tell you. I felt a little better about that, you know, understanding that I was in the wheel here. And so, sure enough, we swapped around. We stopped in the beer store, and they started drinking heavy, and we went on down past around the edge of the Baltimore Beltway, down around the Capitol Beltway, around D.C., and on into the Virginia foothills, you know, Culpeper, Warrenton, right on down through Charlottesville, and right on down. Well, the night was getting later, and they stopped, took on a little more beer. They stopped several times to let out a little more beer. And we started on down. We started on down the road, and I was driving, and they eventually, both of them, conked out. One of them in the back seat, one of them right there in the front seat, just conked out, and I just drove and drove and drove. And it was getting later and later in the night. It was probably about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I realized that I was going to be a hazard on the road if I kept driving. We were just about by Roanoke, and I turned around. I pulled in under a underpass, pulled off the exit, and there we slept, you know, in the early spring mist. And, you know, beer smell permeating the air. All of us clumped up in this Volkswagen. About that next morning, it was just starting to get those first little blue lights of dawn coming on. And I looked around and I kind of woke up and realized, oh, Lord, well, I'm supposed to be driving these guys down to Grundy. We were going to go to Grundy first, then go over to the South Carolina. So I kind of stretched a little bit and got out and stretched and hopped back in the car again. They were still conked out, and I started the car. Well, right then when I started the car, Jake, who'd been driving and moved into the back seat, he wakes up. He says, "Hey, turn around. We're going back." "I'm going to drive. I'm feeling better now." So they swapped around. I hopped in the back. Jake starts driving. Starts on going up the road. Heading up north. And just, you know, the dawn's just kind of breaking as we go on up Route 81. Yeah. Old Jim over in the driver's seat, he wakes up and goes, "Oh, Lord, where are we?" Jake says, "We're going back." "Oh, Lord, yeah, oh, Lord, what, my head hurts, oh, what are we gonna tell our wives? Oh, Lord, what are we gonna tell our wives? Oh, Lord, oh, my head hurts." Jake says, "I tell you what we'll do, let's tell them we went over to the Jersey Shore there, just, you know, right near the house there. Tell them we went down the shore, and we got talking with these fishermen, having a little drink on the beach and in their boats with them. And tell them we just fell asleep on the boat. Next thing you know, we was out in the ocean, and we couldn't come back till this evening." "We'll tell them that, Jake." "Yeah, absolutely. We'll tell them that. Tell them we went out there and fell asleep in that boat, and we just couldn't come back till this evening." I don't know why that was any better a story than what they did. This is what they, yeah, that's what we'll do. We'll tell them that. That's what we'll tell them. Well, we're driving up the road a little further, and we come to a sign that says Harper's Ferry, National Historical Monument. And old Jake says, "Look at that, buddy, a National Historical Monument. What do you say we go in there and look that place over? We might take the wife and kids there. Let's do that. And we just might, let's go in there and look that place over." So we pull into Harper's Ferry there, and we come in looking around, and the sign says Historic District, and we pull on down there, and we pull down in among those old reconstructed, you know, brick buildings, the old colonial buildings, and the trees were just budding out, and the early morning sun is just starting to make the mist rise off of the river, and there's an old black man out there just sweeping the streets, and he's just kind of going along there sweeping the streets. So they pull up to him and say, "Hey, buddy, what can I help you fellas? Yeah, come here a minute. What can I do for you fellas? Where's the scenery at around here?" "The what? The scenery. Where's the scenery? The scenery. Oh, the scenery. Let's see the scenery. Well, it's kind of all out in there, them buildings in there, and that's kind of all around in here." "Oh, buddy, they got some scenery around here now, buddy. Look, Jake, what do you say? We'll get the wife and kid, we're taking down here, we have us a picnic, and we just have us a big time here. They got scenery around in here." Well, we pulled on out of there and went on up the road, and probably about 11 o'clock that next morning, they dropped me off on the Baltimore Beltway, and I hitched home to see my folks, and had a little trouble explaining to him what I've been doing the last day or two. But, you know, just quite a, one of those experiences, you know. Well, I visited around there for a little while, and then I headed on out west, and I made my way out across through Memphis, Tennessee. I stayed with a friend there a little bit, went up to the Ozarks a little bit, went to a bluegrass festival, and then headed on out, and was going across Oklahoma. And it was kind of hard to get a ride. I wasn't getting any rides. It was just, you know, this incredible winds and this sort of open country. And I was there. I had my thumb out, and it was just starting to rain. And all of a sudden, this car pulls over and picks me up. Got a ride with he was a fellow who was an ex-Peace Corps volunteer, and he was heading out to deliver a car to a friend that lived in L.A. And I thought, oh, great. I mean, I got a ride. I was straight through to L.A. Great, you know. And so we just drove and drove, and that night we stayed in Amarillo, Texas, and we drove on further on through Texas and into New Mexico. Now and then we'd see hitchhikers along the road, and for some reason he picked up me. I don't quite know why, and he wouldn't pick up anybody else. He had a big old station wagon that was about empty, but he didn't pick up any others. And of course it was funny because there I was, you know, feeling a real kinship with other hitchhikers on the road, kind of going every time we go by. And it's for some reason we're into New Mexico a little ways, and there's this, we see this figure in the distance on the road ahead, and we look, and there's this pile of luggage around him, and we get looking, and there he is standing there, and he doesn't have his thumb out. He's this incredible character. He had long, flowing hair almost down to his butt, and his pants were just this incredible multicolored collage of patches. And he would just stand there by the road just grinning. And he had this incredibly magnetic twinkle in his eye. And it must have been magnetic, because all of a sudden the guy that was driving pulls right over. And he leans in the window, "Where are you going?" The guy said, "Well, we're going to L.A. And he says, "Well, that's just where I'm going." "Great." And so he opened up the back door, and, you know, in comes all this luggage. In comes a Navajo Indian bedroll with a blanket, you know. And then in comes a pair of tooled leather saddlebags with the guy's name on it. His name was Ben Grissom. And he pops him in there, and in comes this big funky guitar, you know, and he hops in with his funky little paintings all over the guitar, no case on it, just a cloth wrapped around it, and a little knapsack, and this guy was wearing these blue jean jackets, these incredible multicolored pants that were all patches, and sits down there, and he wasn't any young guy, he looked like he was older. I learned later that he was like, you know, 37. Oh, gosh. Oh. He was old, you know, and he'd been around. And here this incredible character just, you know, walks in, you know, into our midst, and we're like, well, what are we saying? You know, well, where are you going? He said, oh, trying to get to L.A. And you live in L.A.? No. He says, I've been traveling. I'm a traveler. And he says, I don't live anywhere. And have you been traveling long? I've been traveling 9 years. 9 years you've been traveling? Oh, well, where you been? And he says, glad you asked. And he pulls out the guitar, and he says, I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along come a semi with a high canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. So I climbed into that cab, then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd ever seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, bud, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Madama, Apollonia, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Asheville, Burnsville, Amadiller. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texarkana, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Talapoos, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Arkansas, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Double Lake, Crater Lake, for Pete's sake, I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
cross the desert's bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Louisville, Nashville, Knoxville, Oma, Packer, Shufflefield, Jackson, Waterville, Concord, Litchfield, Bakerfield, Springfield, Bakerfort, Hanford, Frankfort, Pontiac, Davenport, Idaho, Delaco, Antietam, Davenport, Pasadena, Catalina. See what I mean now? I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Cross the desert's bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Pittsburgh, Cockleburg, Brambleburg, Colorado, Elmsburg, Rexburg, Vicksburg, Eldorado, Larimore, Highflaw, Havistred, Chattanooga, Chaska, Nebraska, Alaska, Opelika, Larimore, Waterloo, Kalamazoo, Kansas City, Sioux City, Cedar City, Dodge City, what a pity. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert's bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man.
Is there no place you've never been?
I've been everywhere. Where?